Yeah, we'll, kind of stand around.
May it please the court, I'm Joseph R. Preston for petitioner. This is a case involving a suit which we filed in the 92nd District Court of Hidalgo County to recognize and enforce a judgment from the Supreme Court of British Columbia, which in British Columbia is a trial court. At the trial court level, both sides moved...
Supreme Court of where?
Of British Columbia, Your Honor, in Canada.
Oh, okay.
At the trial court, both sides moved for summary judgment. The respondent's motion for summary judgment was granted, and of course the petitioner's motion was denied. The summary judgment evidence at trial consisted of some requests for admissions. The respondents admitted that the judgment was genuine. They were personally present at the time of the hearing. It was a contested trial on the merits. It was a bench trial in Canada. The judge ruled against the respondents. It basically concerned an issue of fact, and there is a statement of facts in the record of the entire proceedings in British, or not the entire proceedings, but of the judge announcing his judgment. There was no question that the judgment was genuine. There was no question that the respondents hadn't paid nothing on the judgment that was admitted in request for admissions. It was also not really contested that they had not appealed the judgment. There was some contention by the respondents in the trial court that they were trying to look to try to investigate, to try to file an out-of-time appeal, but in their response to our request for admission, they admitted that, in their words, the formal appeal process had not begun. And so it was very clear that this was a judgment in which they had participated in the trial. They were represented by counsel. They had given depositions. They were personally present. And it concerned a Canadian business transaction, which they had entered into with the petitioner, Don Dockstader Motors. It involved the question of Canadian federal tax rebates, so it was clearly a question of Canadian law. The basis of the summary judgment below, two grounds were cited in favor of respondents' motion for summary judgment, or cited by them. One ground, they claimed that British Columbia does not recognize Texas judgments. As they virtually conceded at the trial court level, this really would not be a basis for summary judgment, and the Court of Appeals so held, and we submit correctly so. Under Section 36.007 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, this is a basis to apply to perhaps stay an action in the court's discretion, or I take that back, that's stay in case of appeal. Under another section, the respondent in this case could have asked the court in its discretion not to recognize a Canadian judgment if it could be shown that Canadian courts do not recognize Texas judgments.
The statute says need not, trial need court not. Need not enforce, but is that discretionary? I mean, if a foreign jurisdiction absolutely and unquestionably recognizes Texas judgments, one Texas trial judge may say, well, that's good enough for me, and another Texas trial judge might say, well, I don't care, I'm not going to enforce it.
Your Honor, the way I read the statute is it is discretionary, and I believe, I personally believe that that perhaps it should not be discretionary, but I believe the way the statute is written that it is discretionary.
Is there any question on this record whether British Columbia, or that we can take judicial notice of, whether British Columbia recognizes Texas judgments?
Your Honor, I believe there is. We could not find a case of a Texas judgment being recognized in British Columbia or in Canada generally, but there are several cases that are mentioned of American judgments, both state and federal, being recognized. At the trial court level, what was contended was that there is a recognition act enacted by British Columbia, which applies primarily, except for West Germany and Austria, to countries of the British Commonwealth. However, as was demonstrated below, American judgments are recognized not under that act, but under the common law in British Columbia. And it was demonstrated through case law from Canada that American judgments are recognized and enforced in Canada under the common law. So there is really, and we would submit, no issue of reciprocity in any event, because it was demonstrated that they will recognize American judgments.
So you prevail both ways, whether it's discretionary or not?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. The reason why the summary judgment was affirmed by the Court of Appeals, and I think the key issue in the case, is whether or not Chapter 36 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, which is a chapter pertaining to foreign country judgments, is constitutional. The Court of Appeals below in Corpus Christi and the Amarillo Court have held that it is unconstitutional, and they have based their holding on a 14th Court of Appeals case, Dedimore versus Sullivan, which is a mandamus case. Before addressing Dedimore versus Sullivan, I'd like to briefly discuss an earlier case from Dallas, which is also a mandamus case, the case of Hennessy versus Marshall. As the Court of Appeals discussed below, there are basically two ways to proceed under Chapter 36. A judgment creditor can file either a plenary suit, as we did in this case, or they can use a short form method. Hennessy versus Marshall held that since the short form method did not give a judgment debtor an adequate opportunity to present defenses, that it was unconstitutional, the short form method, that a judgment creditor would have to, in order to comply with constitutional notions of due process, would have to file a plenary suit. And just as any defendant in any other lawsuit, a debtor in a foreign judgment would then be given an opportunity to raise any defenses that he might have. And we certainly do not quarrel with the holding in Hennessy versus Marshall. Dedimore versus Sullivan came along later, approximately in 1987, and in another mandamus proceeding held that the whole chapter was unconstitutional. And the basis of that was that the court in Dedimore versus Sullivan could not find any specific authority for the filing of a plenary suit, despite the fact that the legislature quite clearly in section 36.005 asserted several specific grounds for non-recognition, grounds that can only be raised in a plenary suit. Many of these grounds were actually raised as defenses by the respondent below, and we would certainly submit that by listing these various specific defenses that can be raised, that the legislature clearly intended that there would be a plenary suit, and that any defenses that might be raised would be raised at the plenary suit. In fact, another case from the 14th Court, Swartz versus FMI Properties, which deals with a New York judgment, not a foreign judgment, has indicated that the right to present defenses is implied. Now, perhaps the distinction might be attempted on the basis of the difference between a sister state judgment and a foreign country judgment. However, I would respectfully submit that in this case, that such a distinction is really not valid. Because first of all, as far as statutory construction goes, if defenses are implied in one chapter, or if the right to present defenses are implied in the chapter pertaining to sister state judgments, there's no reason why they should not be implied in the chapter pertaining to foreign country judgments. Also, the Act itself states that one of its purposes is to make the recognition of foreign country judgments similar to that of sister state judgments. I think the reasoning behind Swartz versus FMI Property is much more sound than the reasoning behind Dedimore versus Sullivan. I think certainly clearly the legislature intended that defensive matters could be raised, that a plenary suit could be filed in defensive matters raised. And I think that Chapter 36 is not unconstitutional, but is in fact constitutional. As this court is well aware...
Even as to the short form?
Not as to the short form, Your Honor.
You're not taking a position.
No, Your Honor. I take no position as to the short form. I don't really think that matters before the court anyway. But I think as to filing of a plenary suit, I think that is a constitutional method to enforce a foreign judgment. And insofar as Chapter 36 allows and mandates the filing of a plenary suit, I believe that is a constitutional way to enforce a foreign judgment. Also, as this court has held repeatedly, and as I think it is certain and clear to all of us, that statutes should be presumed to be constitutional. And if there is a way that the court can construe a statute to be constitutional, it should do so. We would further submit that policy grounds argue for allowing the filing of a plenary suit and the raising of defenses because, of course, the reciprocity issue that we've referred to briefly, certainly if we make it very difficult, if not impossible, to enforce foreign country judgments in Texas, it is very unlikely that foreign countries will enforce Texas judgments. And I submit that public policy would be served, particularly in a situation such as this, a fact situation where we have two people who are Canadian citizens who participated in the trial concerning a Canadian business transaction, Under these circumstances, where there was subject matter jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction, there was no fraud, fraud wasn't even claimed. Under these circumstances, I think that the public policy would argue that this type of judgment should be recognized. Turning to the question of whether our motion for summary judgment should have been granted, we believe that on the basis of the summary judgment record, that certainly it should have been granted, although of course we understand that the court will finally decide that issue. We would simply like to cite the court to the Norcan Lodge case in our brief as a federal court opinion, which we of course know is only persuasive authority. But we would respectfully submit that that case stands for the proposition that we were entitled to summary judgment. Also, I was able to find a U.S. Supreme Court case last week, which I'd like to cite to the court now. It's an old case from 1894. The case is Ritchie versus McMullen at 159 U.S. 235. And essentially, it was a situation which is, again, a Canadian judgment, an appeal from a federal district court, I believe, in Ohio, which had granted what amount under our modern procedure to a summary judgment, and this was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. We believe that under the circumstances of this case that we think the record would support a summary judgment in our favor. As I indicated, the request for admission, they admitted that the judgment was genuine, that they personally appeared, that they had counsel in the proceedings, and that they had not appealed. So we would submit that summary judgment would be proper for the petitioner in this case. However, of course, should the court decide that's not the case, we would submit that certainly respondent was not entitled to summary judgment, and certainly that Chapter 36 is constitutional. And we would therefore like to respectfully pray that this honorable court reverse the judgment of the trial court and the Court of Appeals, and either reverse the case and render judgment in favor of petitioner, or reverse the case and remand it for a new trial on the merits. And at this time, I'll be happy to answer any questions the court might have.
President, I just have a question, not about the merits of the lawsuit, but just curious. We have a Canadian judgment, we have Washington, state of Washington resident, and we have a venue in Hidalgo County. How did that happen?
They were living in Hidalgo County at the time, Your Honor, and also they have property in Hidalgo County. And they were developing a mobile home park down there.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you desire your alternate?